Shalom out there in Na'aleh land. We begin again. We're learning this story today, which is germane to Sfiras HaOmer, when we try and work on our midos, become better people, afford respect, and we learned the bitter lesson of Talmidei Rebbe Akiva. Of course, today's shir always is in Le'ili Nishmas, Rachel Leah Bas Chaim Tzvi. She should have a lichtig Gan Eden, and we commence. I begin by thanking those people involved with Na'aleh, the Reichman family, and the boss behind everything, the brains behind everything, Representative Tzipi Klaver, and for the most help in the studio, of course, the many people that are staff it, but most of all, Libby Bamzer, who's always here to help us, and she gives of herself and of her time. Thank you so much. Those of you in the audience out there, wherever you may be it in England, America, Ecuador, you owe a great debt of gratitude to Mrs. Bamzer, Mrs. Klaver, all these people, and I'm glad I can participate in this as well. Back to excitement now, we're entering the period of Pesach and Sfiras HaOmer. We all know that 24,000 Talmidei Rebbe Akiva perished. And why is that? Shlo nagu kavod zebaze. They did not afford respect one to another. Now, this tragedy basically is unfathomable. We used to say the number. It was 12,000 couples. That makes 24,000. We can do the math. But think about this. 24,000 Talmidei Chachamim. If you do the math, and it's you can quiver from this, that means simple arithmetic mandates that there were about 800 funerals a day for 33 days. Are you out of your mind? We just lost in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Baruch Finkel, Zatzal, and the Mind Quivers, those of you from America who were privileged to know Rabbi Chin passed away 1 week ago. One of these great people passing away, and then, of course, those Kedoshim that were murdered in Merkaz Harav. And could you imagine having 800 funerals, a Gedolei Torah every day? It's unfathomable. And we have one Gadol and Nifter, we go out of our minds. It'd be two in 1 month. We go. And yet there were 800 a day. And it was total annihilation. Gemara says, V'haya ha'ilam shamim. There was no one left and no survivors. Only Rebbe Akiva survived. Which also says wonders about Rebbe Akiva. Any person that would lose 24,000 Talmidim would be, should be so devastated, so broken, they'd be unable to function, unable to talk, unable to speak. And Rebbe Akiva begins all over again. Despite the devastation, he continues. But what we see from here, and again, I don't want to speak bad, I'm not Chalil implying Talmidei Rebbe Akiva, but there's a lesson in which Chazal wants us to learn from this. If you don't afford respect, and what's the lesson? The lesson is that God clearly brooks no compromise regarding Kavod HaBrios. And God will go to this is the lengthiest period of mourning. Regarding the Churban HaBayis, the period is 3 weeks. But for Talmidei Rebbe Akiva, it's 33 days, the longest period of mourning in the Jewish calendar. The Charon Af was so intense, because Shlo Nagu Kavod Zebazeh, the result was that 24,000 Talmidim, and this Churban, now as Rav David Hirschmeyer Zatzal pointed out, in the Holocaust we lost Jews of every stripe. In the time of Rebbe Akiva, it was only the Chachamim, only Gedolei Torah who perished. God can brook no compromise, there cannot have Torah, whatever it means, as much as we can understand, we cannot send the Torah from one generation to the next unless there is kavod, unless there is respect. I just asked someone in the staff over here to adjust the viewing screen. That would be beneficial. Thank you very much, all those working here in Na'aleh studio. Now, this is the unmistakable lesson, almost unearnable lesson is, if without kavod Torah, you can't be moser Torah. You can't give over Torah unless you have respect for Torah, respect for your fellow person. Says Shamshafel Hirsch, that the root of kavod is heavy, meaning self-satisfied. You know the expression zat. I'm zat. I'm heavy, I'm content. In other words, I don't need you. I have to come on to you. I don't have to afford your respect. I'm self-sufficient. I'm fine without you. I have no interest in you whatsoever. I couldn't care less. Okay, so we're going to analyze today in our great attempt to rectify the Kavod HaBrios. We're going to learn the lesson of what Kavod HaBrios is about, Bezer Hashem. Now, the Pasuk says, well, it's Rashi, in Bamidbar, you can look in the Perek Chav Beis Chav Gimel, that why was Bilam's donkey killed? Why was Bilam's donkey killed? So Rashi says, remarkable thing, Bilam's donkey was killed so that he shouldn't be a source of shame to Bilam, because the donkey saw what Bilam didn't see, so if Bilam were to see the donkey, he would be ashamed. And so that Bilam shouldn't be ashamed, Bilam's donkey is killed. Now this is unbelievable. Who is this Bilam? The most nefarious, pernicious, perfidious, Machiavellian, diabolic, sinister, iniquitous individual imaginable. Say Chazal, he was a Nefesh Rechava. A Rotzeach, he slept with his donkey. The most creepiest individual there was. And yet, so that he, this horrible Bilam, should not be shamed, his donkey's killed. So simple Kal V'Chaimer, even if you never went to Yeshiva, and even if you don't have a grub of fingers, simple Kal V'Chaimer. If we can't shame Bilam the Russia, that nefarious, pernicious, perfidious Machiavellian, diabolic, sinister, iniquitous, horrific, vomitatious individual, how much more so not to shame a fellow Jew? How much do we have to afford respect to every individual? No one is as creepy, as horrible as Bilam. Simple Kal V'Chaimer. Says the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, You have to make sure that your friend's respect is as dear to them. Make sure that you respect your fellow person as dearly as you wish to be respected yourself. No one wants to be ignored. No one wants to be humiliated. So afford that respect to your fellow person. People want respect. Said the Alter from Slobodka that a human being cannot live without kavod. And suicide is the result of a person who's bereft of chashivas. A priori, this is pointed out by Rabbi Usher Rubenstein, and Rabbi Zelig Rubenstein, that a priori ergo, if you afford some respect, you're giving them life. You don't have respect, the result is suicide. You don't have respect for yourself. And as Dr. Shia Twersky says, Dr. Abraham Twersky, he said he's written one book. As we all know, he's written dozens of books. But he claims it's one book, the book of self-respect, of self-image, of self-esteem. It's self-esteem in Pirkei Avos, and self-esteem in Mesil Shisharim, and self-esteem in self-esteem. It's all one book. It's the book of having the image. When you have respect, you can afford respect. If you don't have respect, results in death. That's how far it could go. When you give someone kavod, says the Alter, you're giving them life. Now, there's an accepted rule in manufacturing that a product is as good as its cheapest component. If you wish, a chain is as strong as the weakest link. In other words, if you have a $350 million fighter jet, and for all I know, it could cost far more than that. You have a $350 million fighter jet, which has one plastic component that's worth 39 cents. If this goes on the blink, and this gets fritzed, it could bring down the whole jet. A product is as strong as its weakest component. Now, this is an accepted rule in manufacturing. Tragically, unfortunately, this rule is applied in human relations. In other words, what people do is the following. What people do is, you notice a person's drawbacks and not their milus. You notice their drawbacks and not their good points. For example, someone comes late to davening, like flashes before your head, what? This person never went to yeshiva before, there's no importance to davening. Why do they come late for davening? And your mind, you focus coming late to davening this person, and you forget all the kindness, the graciousness, the philanthropy, the magnanimous nature of the person. You know, oh, he doesn't come, he comes late to davening, and you focus on the bad. You look at the cheapest thing, and you don't look at the good. This rule does not work in human relations. It works in manufacturing. Someone's late for davening, you flash it forehead, all the thousands of chazals, how bad it is to come late for davening. It doesn't do you a favor. You know, someone asks you for a favor, you think to yourself, you know, I have a million reasons. I can't give you a favor. And I'd like to help you, but I can't. The other person doesn't understand. And yet when someone denies you a favor, why can't they do me a favor? When you don't do a favor, you have a million justifications. When someone doesn't do you a favor, you can't understand it. When you're late for davening, you know why you're late for davening. But they're late for davening, what's with this person? Day after day, they're always late, what's with them? Okay. Now, the way to mechabed your fellow person, the way to afford respect, says Ruchayim V'loshner, this you'll find in the Ruach HaChayim, is not to denigrate them or to consider them inferior to you in any which way, but to view every person as a Tzelem Elokim. On some occasion, we'll talk about, if we haven't already, how Slobodka views Tzelem Elokim. Tzelem Elokim means there is potential in man to become godly. And if you don't attempt to become godly, then you have failed, because that's within a person. But Tzelem Elokim bara, you have the wherewithal, you were created with this ability to be godlike. And if you're not, you have failed. You failed in your mission. Okay, so now, I'm going to give an example. This may sound a bit far-fetched, but let's give an example. Let's say you're traveling on a far distance. You're going from Yerushalayim to Tzfat for Shabbos, okay? You're going from New York to Silver Spring for Shabbos, a long trip. And let's give an American example. All right, you're going from New York to Silver Spring for Shabbos. Silver Spring, if you're not familiar, it's Silver Spring is a suburb of Washington, D.C. It's a trip of several hours, many long, tedious hours. That's if you don't hit traffic. Let's say you take the train. So that happens like this. You're going for Shabbos to Silver Spring, and the train leaves at 10 o'clock in the morning. You had it all planned out. You're going to get up early. You're going to daven. You're going to eat breakfast. You'll head off to the train station. You take the subway. You go to the train station. Go to Penn Station, Manhattan, and you'll go down to Silver Spring. You'll arrive in time, and you'll be rested, and you'll have a nice, enjoyable train ride. But you overslept. And you're so late. And you right away, you grab your overnight bag. You take your sitter. You call the car service, and you race out. No time for a subway. You race out to Penn Station. You arrive 4 minutes before the train. They're already announcing all aboard to go the train to Washington. You want to should you buy something at the train station, buy a drink, buy a nosh, buy a something. My friend calls it the Entenmann, Harry Bream in Staten Island. The Entenmann, so he calls it Dr. Entenmann. You know, you always, when you're desperate, you consult the doctor. So yeah, you need something to get into the gut, but I don't know, they're calling all aboard, you want to miss the train. So you get on the train, and on the train they only sell trade stuff there, there's nothing to buy, and oh, you're hungry. By the time you arrive in Silver Spring, you are so hungry. You come to the home, and as you arrive outside the house, you can only smell the aromas of Shabbos wafting through the cobblestone, coming through you. Oh, gewaldig. You walk into the house, and they're so gracious, and they say, oh, shalom, shalom. And the husband is bowing, the lady is curtsing, and the kids are, oh, come, good Shabbos, welcome. We can't wait to bring you into our house. And no, they say, would you like something to eat? Every girl in the world will say, no thanks. That's not relevant to the story, but it's just the way it is. And every boy in the world will say, you know, after a long trip, now, of course, the boy, no matter how late he is, he's going to still buy 16 bags of potato chips and brownies and cookies and soda. So the whole time in chocolate bars, the whole way down to Washington, his jaw is dynamically, perpetually engaged. He comes to the house before they invite him, and he's already in the kitchen looking for any carbohydrates they may have. Okay, back to our story. So you come on this long trip, you're so hungry. You walk into the home, and you walk in, you say, why, that painting on the wall is so nauseating, vomitatious, fulsome, miasmic. I, and the host whispers to you that he painted it. Oh, now you want to eat over Shabbos, you're very hungry. Oh, color, depth, brush strokes. I never saw such a nice range of depth and color. Now, knowing me that moronic and basilic and idiotic to say that the painting was ugly, if you only were seeing the signature of the artist. Says the idea is, now I grant you this example may sound a bit far-fetched. You ever notice certain words in English sound like the Yiddish? Like far-fetched, far-flung, far rockaway. Okay, back to our story. So you come into the house. Now, no one be that moronic, but you have to see that signature of the artist. The idea is to see in every person the Yud-Ke, Vav-Ke, God is the craftsman, God is the artist, and on every person we're all created with Selim, God is the artist who's put the signature on the person. Interesting thing, you know, I'm in hospital, you know, I have a large family. You get to the hospital pretty often. And sometimes you ever see a new baby, and my students, they show me, look, a new baby. And new babies, they look, you know, Baruch Hashem, they're not yet beautiful, new babies. But you have to see in them also, Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, this is a beautiful thing. Says Gemara Tainis. Now, there's no studio in the whole world as well equipped as Na'aleh. Because here we have Pythik. Right here. This is not just beautiful background for speaking, but we have at our fingertips. Rishonim, Acharonim, Bavli, Rambam. Says Gemara Tainis. Daf Chof. Yes, listen to this Gemara. Zak to Gemara. We're talking about Chof. Ma'ish Shabbat Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Shimon, this great rabbi, is traveling Migdal Gedor from Migdal Gedor. Mibes Ram was traveling from his Rebbe's house. Wonderful. He went to his Rebbe to learn Torah. He's traveling home. He's riding on his high horse, quite literally and figuratively. He's up there in his Lexus, riding on his donkey. Umetayel Asfat Hanahar. He's taking the scenic, picturesque river route. Wonderful. He's coming back from his Rebbe, he's riding on his high horse, taking the picturesque route. The Sam Simcha Gedayla, yeah, he's very happy. Why is he so happy? Because he learned Torah, that's wonderful. He's very happy, Sam Simcha Gedayla, extremely happy. Hidata Gasala. Uh-oh. This is gas and alcohol. This never mix. And he's very proud of himself. Once you get hubris involved, be aware that this is gas and alcohol. There's problems brewing now. He's filled with himself. He was proud of the fact that he's learned a lot of Torah. Learning Torah is great. Being proud of it, pride is not a good attribute. He meets a man who is exceedingly ugly and says this ugly man to him, Shalom Alecha Rebbe. The ugly man says, greetings, great master, Rebbe, greetings to you, greetings, Rebbe. And this miser, Shimon Rav Elazar, he doesn't deign to respond. Rebbe, hello, how are you? Doesn't even answer him. Rebbe, how? No answer. Armelah, he finally said it again. So he said, Reka, said the Rebbe on the high horse. Reka, emptiness. Come, he says it in third person, not out of deference, but by ignoring him. How ugly is this thing? Ew. Ugliness. Emptiness. How ugly is this thing? Ew. I never saw anything. I never held anything. Shem called me Recha Mecharam Kamas. Perhaps all the villagers in your town are as ugly as you. Amr La, he said, this ugly man, Eini Yodeya. I don't know. Ella, but I recommend. Lech va'amr lo min shasa'ani. Go to the craftsman who fashioned me. And say to him, come klizesh asisa, and go complain to him, how ugly is this vessel which you made? Don't complain to me, go to the one who made me. Complain to him. Right away he realized he said something terribly inappropriate. Kem shi'adabaz, he knew on himself, he understood. Chota, that he made a terrible sin. Yerimach, he gets down from his high horse, quite literally, and he gets out of the Lexus. He prostrates, genuflex on the ground. Yishtakel the fun of Amrloi. Now, Nezlecha, I beg of you, Macholi, please, I beg you, please, I cajole Leweedle, forgive me, I said something wrong, please, I beg of you, forgive me. Amrlai, said the ugly man, Aini, Michael, I shan't forgive you. Had he come from England, I shan't forgive you. Till you go to the craftsman who fashioned me. Amrlai, say to him, come, Machur, Klizesh, Asisa, go to the craftsman, go above, and say, how ugly is this thing, how ugly is this vessel which you made? He's going after him, please, I know I did wrong, I was wrong, could you please forgive me? He's begging, he's cajoling, he's wheedling, please forgive me. And the ugly man is walking, after him, please, I did wrong, I was wrong, please forgive me. Until they come to the village of the Rebbe. And then what happens? All the villagers come out. The great Rebbe has returned. They come to the village, Yatsu B'Nairo, all the villagers come out. I omrim lo, and they say to him, Shalom Alecha Rebbe, Murray. Greetings to our esteemed and revered venerable leader, our scholarly, erudite, provident, judicious individual. Greetings to you. This old man, the ugly man says, What? Why anyone run that by me again? What? Amr Lahem, he said to them, Lemiatam Karim Rebbe. Who in the world are you calling Rebbe? Who are you calling Rebbe? Who? Amr Lahem, he said to him, the one who's walking right behind you. He's the one. He is a great Rebbe. And said the ugly man, Amr Lahem, if Zer Rebbe, Al Yubu Kamos Israel. If this is a Rebbe, there should not be more like him among our people. Because he doesn't know how to afford respect. What a piercing Gemara. What a story. That means you don't see on the person the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the signature of the artist. Now, the rule is, you have to see a person's good parts and not their bad. Look for the good and not for the bad. Focus on the good. Don't focus on the bad. And the true test is not how we're mechabed somebody we love, or a gadol. The test is not how you show respect to a great rabbinic figure. Who wouldn't want to have a great gadol in their car, a great rabbi in their home, a great rabbi grace their table? Who wouldn't want that? That's not kavod. The test is how do you respect someone who gets on your nerves? Should I give you examples of getting on your nerves? That's the key test. How do you respect someone? You know, there's a guy in shul next to you who blows his nose the whole time, right all over you. He's spritzing everywhere. He makes a baltokeya proud. Brrr. He's blowing, and he's got this keychain, and he's rattling away, and he's got coins in his pocket, And it's just all your fillings in your teeth are going, this guy's davening away in the keychain and the coins, and he's blowing his nose, and he's odorific and malodorous. This is the guy. This is the guy you have to show respect to. Said, that's what Rosh Salanter said. He said, Kama Pamim B'chol Yom. He told his Talmidim several times a day, find someone who gets on your nerve, and to him, you afford respect. That's the trick. Not some great rabbi. Respect to that. Chesed for those people. This is classic Rosh Salanter. Classic Rosh Salanter. He was always battling himself against putting yourself on top of someone else. Right? You point the finger at someone else, you're pointing three fingers at yourself. He didn't like the fact that people were taking only the religious agenda, and what about other people? Because the focus really is just your own spirituality, and what about the other person's individuality? He used to say like this, I care about the other person's gashmias and my own ruchnis. I'm worried about the other person's material well-being and my own spiritual well-being. That's how he defined the tzaddik. The tzaddik means I don't care about the other person's ruchnis, I care about the other person's gashmias. In other words, I'm not worried about the length of her skirt, the length of his tzitzis, what's in her pot. I'm worried about, does he have a place to sleep and does she have a place to eat? That's what I'm worried about. And that gashmias brings to ruchnias. And let me share with you an example. If you're of the female persuasion, it'll be harder for you to relate to this, but you go to a shtibel, like in Yerushalayim Zichron Moshe, where they're always trying to get a minion. So they're soliciting. They want to know, they're trying to get a minion. Did you daven yet? In my mind's eye, I always picture Rosh Salanter just standing on the corner asking, did you eat yet? Did you sleep yet? He's worried about the other person. Not did they daven yet? Not did they bench yet? Not did they wash their hands yet? I'm worried about did you eat? Did you sleep? And it's the gashmias that brings to the ruchnias. That's what a tzaddik is. You find so many tzaddikim the other way around. Klash Rosh Salanter. You know, you wash your hands for bread. You have to wash twice on the right hand up until the joint, and twice on the left hand up until the joint. And people were very from. You always notice they're pouring buckets and buckets and buckets and buckets. And the Gemara says that the more water you use, the greater the blessing. And yet, so Salanter was at a wedding, and they noticed that he washed his hands for bread. He poured just enough water. Didn't waste not a drop and not half a drop. Not on the right and on the left. Why? They asked him why. When he could talk, he explained. It's not like you open a faucet and open a tap. There's a water schlepper. I'm going to be macher. I'm going to be stringent and have to schlep more water for me. Oh no. That violated his doctrine. Never yourself on the expense of someone else. Guy puts on his talus and shawl, and he whips 14 people in the radius. Who needs the talus? Person got up early in the morning to say slichas. There's penitential prayers for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Neroyim. So he gets up early in the morning, and he wakes up his wife. Makes himself a coffee, slaps up the kitchen, runs outside, slams the door, wakes up the kids. Said, who needs the slichas? His Talmidim went to bed. Michelle Salanter's Talmidim went to Beit Matzis. And this is where all the compulsive behavior comes out. So they go to Beit Matzis. Rebbe, tell us we're going to Beit Matzis. What should we machmer? What should we be careful to be stringent upon? He said, oh, I'm so glad. I'm just so glad that you asked. Be very, very careful. You don't raise your voices. Yeah, Rebs. But what about maybe 18 minutes? We'll do it 16. Do 16 minutes, not 18 minutes. No. Don't raise your voices. Yeah, but what about maybe we'll put paper on the walls, on the ceiling, on the floor, on our faces, everywhere? No. Don't raise your voices. Don't make a mess. Clean up after yourselves. But what about the 16, the 18 minutes? Maybe put paper everywhere and we'll grind the we'll use new broom handles instead of using taking sandy. No. This is what I want you to do. Why? Because the proprietress of the bakery is a widow. If you're going to cause her anguish, it's not worth having the matzahs. That was just Salanter's doctrine. The Gemara says, Brachas, Daf Chav Ches, Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu, Ayayayayay. Teach us, Rabbi Lazar Gadol is on his deathbed. Everyone gathers around for they know that when he passes from this world, it'll be darker, it'll be colder. We need one more message to carry on with your warmth in your absence. Rabbi, please, Yelamdeinu Rabbeinu, give us a parting message. And he gives a parting message. He begins by saying, He's Haru, Bechvod Chavrecha. Be careful about your friend's respect. An echo from the time of Rabbi Kiva. Be careful about your friend's respect. Mashallah, what is this analogous to? Let me give you an analogy. Based on a thought I heard from Rabbi Usher Zalig Rubinstein. Let's say one of your neighbors is getting married. So you go outside to drive, get in the car and drive to the wedding. Now you're getting into your car just as your neighbor is going outside to get into his car. Now your neighbor lives in a beautiful mansion. He gets out of his car, gets out of his home, and the door, no squeaking, it just closes perfectly. And it's got one of these automatic pneumatic door closer. He goes outside, the door clicks closed, he walks across his manicured lawn, and he goes to his Lexus, of course, to his beautiful Lexus. Now, you go out of your car, I mean, he's trying the whole time, pulling the door closed, you get the door closed from your house, and your lawn looks like a garbage dump, and you kick your way out of your lawn. You get into your Plymouth Duster circa 1970. For those of you who don't remember that, that means you must be even younger than I am. So get into your very simple car. Now, needless to say, the door doesn't work on the driver's side, so you have to crawl through the window on a passenger side. And you crawl and you jump through the window, and now you can't even close the window because the crank doesn't work. So you have to push out the window, and you crawl over to the driver's seat, and then finally kick on the engine, and you make it to your cruising speed of 35 miles an hour, and your neighbor, he turns on the Lexus, he's out of there. He's gone. And you're putt-putting away, and this neighbor's starting to get on your nerves. And your neighbor, of course, he parks valet parking, and you park five blocks away. No one should see what you're driving. Now, this guy is really, really getting under your skin. He's on your nerves. You walk into the hall, and who should you bump into? None other than Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet himself. He says to you, how would you like to drive a year 2008 Lincoln Continental? I could live with that. Yeah, I could do that. All you have to do is afford respect to your fellow person. That's all? Sure. And you run into the hall, and you see your neighbor is just about to sit down. You go, excuse me, sir. One second, sir. And you take the chair, and you dust it off, and you sit him down on there, and you say, are you comfortable? He says, what's going on? Oh, I just want to make sure you're comfortable. You look like that's a good pose. Now, and you straighten out the napkin, and you put the plate just perfectly, and you align the knife and the spoon and the fork. Oh, good. Now, sir, you look very, very thirsty. You look thirsty to me. What can I get you from the bar? Would you like something hot, something cold? Would you like how about a glass of schnapps? What? Simple respect. I do this all the time. Just respect. That's in this world. Comes the world to come. Comes the world to come. So after orientation and registration, so you're waiting in a parking lot where they're handing out mode of transportation for the new world, and you see your friend scooting across the sky in his new jet. And you're waiting and waiting and waiting for them to give you your mode of transportation, waiting for your jet, and then all of a sudden you hear the sickening. And then comes out this old mule with a rib cage protruding, and his hoofs are gnarled, ready for the glue factory. He's so old and sickly. Behind him is this wagon that is so splintery, like a porcupine, with a designer license plate with your name on it. You go, God, could we talk about motor transportation? No. That's a term below over here. You want it? He's hara b'chodach arechem. You have to make sure you do it in this world to get it in the world to come. He's hara, be careful. That's the first step. Afford respect. Now, Torah law is that you have to help out your enemy's struggling ox. I say this to my kids on many occasions. The law is that you have to return your neighbor's struggling ox. How about struggling ox? If your neighbor's ox gets lost, you have to help him out. I'm sorry, it's not your neighbor, your enemy's ox. I tell my kids that your neighbor's ox is at least as good as your mother's dishes. Now, everyone knows you have to help out your enemy's ox. And what about your mother's dishes? Isn't she good enough to be for that? So the altar says, do you help out for Shabbos? Do something lechavad Shabbos? He said, Avad, of course, I do lechavad Shabbos. He said, I don't need to do lechavad Shabbos. Do help out by your wife. Enough to lechavad Shabbos. Do something to help out your wife. That's what I'm more concerned about. There's a story that there was a fellow who was learning in Kollel, and he's a newlywed. And he told his wife that she should take out the garbage, and she said, well, would you mind taking out the garbage? He said, but I'm learning Kollel. I can't take out the garbage. And she said, well, my father takes out the garbage. Now, how is he going to make his wife understand this? I'm sure they're newlyweds, but, you know, don't you understand? Your father's a Baal Habos. I'm learning Kollel. It doesn't pass. It's not appropriate for a man who's learning Torah and Kollel. He doesn't take out the garbage. That your father does it, he's because he's working. He's not learning. But she made such a big deal about it. He went to his Rosh Hashiva, he went to Rav Gifter's Zichron Lebracha, told Rav Gifter that, you know,
maybe his wife complains that why is it that I tell her she should take out the garbage and not me? Because she doesn't understand the importance, the chashivas, the sublime nature and nobility of one who's learning Torah. And is she right or is she wrong? He said, of course, you shouldn't be taking out the garbage because you're learning Kol. Rav Gifter corroborated, in fact, vindicated his position. The next night, supper time, there's a knock on the door. Who's that? They go to the door, and there's Rav Gifter. What's the Rosh Hashiva? What can we do for the Rosh Hashiva? She said, I've come to take out the garbage. I wouldn't want you to do it. You're learning Kol, but I'll take it out. I have a feeling from that moment on, this person never had a problem again taking out the garbage. Now, all prohibitions against humiliating an individual have bearing here. Writes the Sefer Hasidim, very important words. You cannot question a guest in learning unless you're sure that he'll answer intelligently. I have this all the time. I give people a hitch. And as a mentor, I always like to ask them what they're learning. And sometimes I get a sense right away that they're really not learning so much. That's why they're on the roads. And such a person, if you don't think they can answer well, you cannot question them learning lest you embarrass them. Likewise, you may not kiss a youngster in the presence of a single elderly adult lest you cause them hurt feelings because they don't have children of their own. At the core of this, the serious prohibition of halbanas panim, which is a gross violation of kavod abrios, causing someone to be ashamed is clearly a violation of just trampling upon their kavod abrios, their human respect, their needs for decency. Is a remarkable story by Shoyanka Lubachansky. It takes one to know one. Rav Nissen Alpert was probably one of the greatest tzaddikim I've ever was zocha to know in my life. And he would describe Shoyanka Lubachansky as an angel beyond description. A man of incredible piety and sublimity. And he was the Rebbe, he was the Mashkiach in Baranovich, and the Rav in the town of Baranovich. He was not privileged to have children, so all the Yeshiva Bachurim were his children, and he was murdered by the Nazis. In the Baranovich ghetto, he had a smile on his face. They said to him, how could you smile at a time like this? He said, I have nothing to give you. I have no food to give you. I have no clothing to give you. I have nothing to give you except for my smile. I can give you, try and give you a good look. That's all I can give. The man was as pious. And this not been described once. He was, you know, people would come to his house. He would start motioning right away. Just want, you know, to wash. Come to the house and wash. And before he came, everyone was his child. And he said he was once in the house and he was biting into an apple. And there was an apple there. There's a worm in the apple. He said, look at this worm. He said, look at this apple. I'm more rotten than the apple. A true Navardiker. I'm more rotten. Man, it was a scintillating tzaddik. I'm more rotten than the apple. Okay, here's a story. You'll find this story written by Chaim Shapiro, Zichron Levracha. What a story. We know, we learn out from Tamar. Better you throw yourself in the fiery furnace than shame someone in public. Now, this expression, albeit that was the case with Tamar and Yehuda, but what an antiquated, arcane expression. Better you throw yourself in a furnace than shame someone in public. So the story goes like this. In Baranovich, now this, again, if you live in America, a little bit different if you live in England or Europe, but basically, it is very hard for us to relate to this, because in the winter, true, the sun rises much later, but in Europe, especially Northern Europe, like you're talking about countries like Lithuania or certainly a little bit Switzerland, certainly Denmark, Northern England, you can't dive in the winter till at least 8:45 in the morning. It's very difficult. So what happened was then, they would dive at 7 o'clock in the morning, but in the winter, it was just pitch black at 7 o'clock. So they'd come to shul at the regular time, they recite Tehillim until it would be light enough for them to begin davening. Now, the shul in the winter, we're talking about the Eastern European winter, very, very, very cold, exceedingly cold. Unless you're from Canada, maybe you have a taste of something cold that no one from America has ever experienced before. Very cold. So what happened was, it was a job of the gabbai, the shamish, he was to bring in timber before people came to shul, light the furnace, so when people come in, it would be toasty warm and not cold as the outside. However, he thought to himself, why should I go out schlepping in all this wood when all these freeloaders, Mishulachim, who sleep in the shul, let them schlep the wood. Let them do something for their own upkeep. And there's always arguments. The Shnurer said, why should we get it? He's getting paid to do it. It's his job. And he said, why should I do it? Said the Shamish, these people, they're freeloaders. Let them do it. And every day there's machlokas. And every day the shul was closed. The shul was cold, I'm sorry. Then one day, all the arguments came to an end. All the arguments came to an end, and the shul was warm. The shamash was sure that the mishulachim, the shnaris, were finally doing what he told them to do. Shlach HaMashiach, the Shamash is finally doing his job, because why make people suffer the whole winter? It never occurred to anyone that the famous righteous, pious, devout, sincere Rishol Yankov Lubitschansky, that tzaddik himself, was when no one was looking early in the morning to avoid machlokes, he'd gather up all the wood, bring him to the furnace, get the fire started, and then disappear. Come back to daven an hour later. One morning in Teves, when the sun rises very late, he had a hard time getting the wood started, the fire started, because it was so wet from the snow, and he had his head in the furnace, blowing on the flame, trying to get the fire started. And the shamish walked in the pre-dawn, did not recognize who it was whose head was in the furnace, and he assumed it must be one of the mishalachim. In a quote-unquote joking way, he gave him a kick in his posterior. Rav Solovyov realized, the Rav Abranovich, the Mashgiach in Yeshiva, that if he were to take his head out of the furnace now, it would terribly shame the shamish. Put his head in deeper. And he waited and he waited and he waited, waited until the person walked away. The person finally left, he removed his head, and his beard was gone. It had totally caught fire. That's mamish. Better you throw yourself into a furnace than shame someone in public. That is the ultimate, one of the worst ways of not affording kavod abrios, respect for someone. Now, here's a hard one. I'm talking to myself primarily, of course, and that is respect for the family. It's so much easier to honor a stranger, but so much harder to honor your spouse, your children, your parents. That's harder. But Rav Yochanan Mezake would be makdim shalom even to the goy in the marketplace. There wasn't a goy in the marketplace that would ever give shalom to Rav Yochanan Mezake before he would always be first, to the simplest people. Okay. And ancillary to this is the idea of the savor of panim yafos. To greet people with a nice, cheery smile. That's showing respect to people. Moodiness is not a victimless crime. Aside from what the moody person does to his or her surrounding, he's making people think that they also could be responsible for the mood that this person feels so bad. So unless you have a very compelling reason to be moody, you have no right to do this because you're making other people suffer. There was a person who was walking around, a Talmud Yisrael Salanter, walking around during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva before Yom Kippur. Ay, 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 tshuva, 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 with a very heavy mien. Aseres Yisrael Salanter, you can't do this. You cannot walk with such a heavy expression because people will think that you're looking down because of them. You can't do this. And he said the classic expression, you have to have this engraved on the mirror in your bathroom. Your face is Rishus HaRabim and your heart is Rishus HaYachid. Your heart is the public domain. Pardon me, your heart is private domain. Your face is public domain. That's an unbelievable statement. Now, it's a great statement. It's very pithy, but could it ever be done? And I have the answer. The answer is yes. I took my twin daughters for their bas mitzvah to go see. They were in America to see Rav David Hechter Zatzal, the great Rosh Yeshiva from Kol Torah. And this was 2 days before he died. He was in Mount Sinai Hospital. He had cancer of several varieties, including liver cancer. He was all yellow. There was one whisker left on his face. His head was totally bald from all the treatment. There was no hair on his head. There was no hair on his face. He was being burned alive. He was a bag, a sack of bones. And he had a smile from here to the stratosphere, from here to here, from here to China. That says, oh, I can't, it's out of the screen, I realize. That was his smile. And he was always like this. I cannot begin to fathom the pain that he was suffering, but he put on a smile that just adorned the whole place. Everyone, he endeared everyone to himself with that smile. And we can't fathom the suffering. And here he is 2 days before he dies. My daughters come in and he gives them the blessing of a lifetime. That's what it means. Your heart is private domain. Your face is public domain within the rubric of kavod abrios. Now, if a person cannot control their moods or their emotions, then you probably either need professional help, medication, but it's not a victimless crime. It makes other people feel that they're to blame. Sometimes children from divorced families feel that as if they're to blame for their parents' an inability to get along. Now, I want to tell you something, by the way. Moody people, this is pointed out by Rabbi Joseph Solushkin, moody people are not stupid. You'll never find a personal advertisement, I am a moody person looking for someone of similar deportment. No one wants to be around a moody person. You have to have a nice face for everybody. So let me make a suggestion now, based on an idea I once heard from Ribson Heller. People have this very nice custom, especially around Yom Narayim, they go 1 hour a day free of Lashon Hara. You ever hear this? Go 1 hour a day, you're not going to say Lashon Hara, like 3 o'clock in the morning. So like we said earlier, Ad Shetech Patz, let's do something that's L'maisa. We'll do it Leila Nishmas Rav Eli Baruch Finkel. Let's go 1 hour a day. No, 1 hour a day, Kavod HaBrius. Kavod HaBrius, showing, affording respect. That's what we're going to do. Afford respect. Well, at least, the Kavod HaBrius means to the gardener, to the guard, to the person, the parking lot attendant, to the janitor, to the... all these people, the plumber, all the people who we normally don't even pay much attention to afford them respect, not to the person that you normally would always afford respect to. And now you do more than an hour a day, you do it all day long, that's wonderful. But let's make a Kabbalah. There's a very, very well-known story. We're going to end this session with a few anecdotes of Ryan Cutler, a very famous story that he was driving. It's almost an unfathomable story into our mindset today, but we're going to do a Rashi in it. He was being driven, I guess it was on the Garden State Parkway, and the Talmud, who was driving, was going towards the toll machine, and Ryan Cutler redirected him to the toll collector because of Kavod HaBrius. You have to give more respect to it. There's a person, not the machine. You go to the person. Now, that's the story. And Rav David Hirsch Myers, that's how, pointed out to me, this requires a Rashi. Now, who is this toll collector? Probably a wife beater, has numerous communicable diseases. He'd be much happier reading his comic book than being disturbed. And, I would understand if he would get money from the, give him the money, let him get his commission. He gets no more money if people don't come to him. He'd much rather be reading his comic book, listening to his appalling radio station. And that's the whole point. It's still a person. He gets respect over the machine. That's Kavod HaBrius. I cannot think of a better example of the antithesis of Kavod HaBrius than Nazi Germany. A person had no worth. A Jew was not even a vermin. No innate respect for a human being. Even their own people. Right? For 3 years, took all those that were mentally challenged and just had them gassed and cremated. No respect for anyone. No respect for a human. Okay. Let me just tell you a few quick anecdotes and we'll wish you a very good Sfiras HaOmer. So firstly, the Hunterstipel Rebbe had an operation without anesthesia. And they asked him, how could you do with anesthesia? And he said, he hears the Tzaras of Hasidim every day. And that pain is far deeper than the pain of cutting out the flesh. Chatzal Abramsky, I might have told you this once before, he was a remarkable person. That name's not familiar. That means you don't read enough Teller books, but it is rectifiable. Dayan Abramsky got the name Dayan because he was the head of the London Beis Din. He made his job contingent on the fact he'd have total control of all kashrus in London. Not all the butchers took kindly to this, and one butcher had the gall, the audacity, to summon him to court. And I do not mean Beis Din, I mean Erkoya, secular court. They warned Dayan Abramsky before he went to court. He was a very forceful individual. Would raise his voice, pound his fist, he said. They warned him that if you raise your voice in court, the judges will flip their wigs, quite literally and figuratively, because in England they were shaitels. And when I prepared my book on Dayan Abramsky, I went through the court proceedings, and the judges wrote that albeit this court is not accustomed to hear an old tiger roar so loudly, we must unequivocally rule that he is correct. One point in the court proceeding, the judge asked him, who is the greatest Talmudic authority alive? He said, I am. And the judge said, what about humility? He said, yes, Your Honor, but I'm under oath. Anyway, this very forceful Dayan Abramsky, at the end of his life, he lived in Beit Vegan, and one day he was walking with his shamish, with his attendant in Beit Vegan, sees this little girl crying, goes, she's going, so Dayan Abramsky bends down to this girl and said, what's the matter, little girl? What's the matter, little girl? What's the matter, little girl? And so finally she looks up and says, what's the matter? She said, My friend said that my dress is not pretty. Dayan Abramsky straightened himself up to his full height and he said, I want you to tell your friend, Sheharab Pasak, the great rabbi, has ruled, Shasim Lashalach, that your dress is ma'od, 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 yafa. Your dress is very, 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 very pretty. And his attendant comes, well, what's this all about? So Dayan Abramsky, Omach Hashem Elokim Dinu Me'alkal Panim, God is going to wipe away the tears from every face, and our job is to mimic the ways of God and afford respect to everyone, even a little girl. Therefore, I have to do the way God would do. Therefore, respect to everyone. There was a woman in the Chevra Kedisha in Williamsburg who made a takana that not to pass anything over the corpse, not anything over the mess. It's not a slab of meat. It's not a table. This is a human being. This is a neshama. This is a shell. And therefore, you have no right. You don't pass anything over the corpse. You just... Because that's the kind of, because this is a human. We don't want to become socialized and look at this hospitalization, as it's called sociology, you look at people as objects. They're not living, it's a human being. You don't step on it, you don't walk on it, you don't pass things over it. And here is really the ultimate kicker. Where do you find the Torah? Where do you find the Torah? I want you to think about it. Where do you find the Torah? A din which portrays the concept of Kavod Brios. I'm waiting. Still waiting. Where do you find the Torah? A din which reflects Kavod Brios. The answer is, we know that if you steal a cow, you pay back 5. But what about a sheep? If you steal a cow and you slaughter it or you resell it, but what about a sheep? You pay back 4. Why is that? So Rashi brings one opinion from the Gemara Baba Kama, because the thief is shamed. He has to carry the shepsla on his shoulder, and that's shameful, and therefore he gets a 20% discount. Why? Kavod HaBrios. Mamshi Din Torah. Din Torah. Kamin Choymer. I was driving and borrowed a car in Detroit one Sunday morning. I think this is on 10 Mile Drive and Oak Park, wherever it was. And driving Sunday morning, and all of a sudden I see in the rearview mirror the worst possible thing that you could see. Blobby, 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 blob. There, a state trooper pulls up from behind me. This big black cop, around 19 feet tall, wingspan of about 13 feet in each direction, gladiatorial physique, as erect. Exclamation point. He gets out of the car, the state trooper, comes over to my window, and he's one of these in-your-face kind of guys. And I mean in-your-face. You know, like, I saw what he had for breakfast, down to the very last anchovy. He says to me, "You've been going one way, wrong way, on a one-way street." I said, "Excuse me, officer." He said, "You went the one." In other words, he's trying to tell me that I went one way, the wrong way. I know I went the wrong way on a one-way street in the wrong direction. I said, "Excuse me, officer, but if I'm not mistaken, the sign said that it is one way from 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's now 7:45." He said, "You wait here a second." He gets back into his patrol car. He drives up to the sign, comes back, slow, 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 slow. He gets out of the car, and now he's about 3 inches tall. He rattles over to me and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I guess you're right." I said, "That's okay, officer," I said, and I stuck out my hand, shook his hand. Otherwise, it wouldn't have an occasion to meet such a fine officer. I have a feeling that day there were no other Jews who got tickets out there in Oak Park, Michigan. You have to afford respect. And to conclude, in 1995, there were Special Olympics which took place in New Haven, Connecticut. And since I've always been interested in this, I rented a car, drove out to New Haven, and I came for the last day. It was a real bargain basement Olympics that day. It was a small crowd, very loving crowd, very kind crowd. And it was the final, it was a bargain basement kind of triathlon. These athletes, that all of them were special, meaning they were brain damaged. They had to do several calisthenic events, mainly jumps. But because they didn't really know how, there were counselors helping them, showing them where to jump and how to jump. And there's one kid, a kid with a zillion freckles, redhead, flaming hair, and he was a crowd pleaser. He always understood which way to jump and how to jump. He was very athletic, and he was a crowd pleaser. He was the heartthrob right there that day in New Haven Coliseum. They had to do several calisthenic events, and then they had to do 3 laps around the New Haven Coliseum. That was the culminating event. So he was the sure favorite to win. So he's running, and sure enough, he must have been 6, 7, 8, 9 feet and had the closest competitor. He comes to the finish line about 20 feet before the end, and the next closest competitor, number 2, was, again, you know, several good feet behind him, slipped, also brain damaged boy, slipped, tripped, and fell, and the front runner didn't have enough seichel to finish the race. He went back, helped this boy up, the 2 of them came to the finish line together, and the crowd went crazy, applauding. For this boy, with all of his limitations, understood the fundamental, rudimentary concept of Kavod HaBrios. And we that are so highfalutin, we understand this concept. Let me just look at the hints here from the Nale audience. Have we already gone too far? So let me just tell you one last story. Is that, if that's okay? Okay, Nale people? Thank you. All right, one last story. And the best story, I'm not going to tell you, but you'll have to read some Teller books where you'll find the story. One last story. And that is, there was a kid, Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, this boy is standing in front of a clothing store in Borough Park. Very poor boy. His shirt is threadbare. His pants are shiny and tattered. His knees are protruding. His toes are coming out of his shoes. Such a poor boy. And he's standing outside this clothing store. And one family after another family after another family. They're all coming out with all these shopping bags and pekalach. Beautiful clothing. And he's looking with these envious eyes. He's so jealous. Eyes as wide as manhole covers. And so a mother comes out with the 3 children. She's schlepping all these shopping bags and pekalach. And she sees this little boy with these envious eyes. She tells her kids, you wait here. Takes the little boy by the hand, and she marches him into the store like one of her own, and she outfits this poor boy from head to toe. Kid feels like $1 million. And then he says to her, he says, tell me, he says, tell me, are you God? Rather taken aback by the question, she said, no, just one of his children. He said, I knew you had to be related, because we understand that we're his children, that we're created in God's image. That means we see in every person the Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, God's signature, and everyone is deserving of respect, particularly now, the time that we mourn, in the strongest period of mourning for Talmidei Rebbe Akiva, they didn't afford respect. Let's make that rectification.